Welcome to the Hudson Valley Disc Golf Podcast. My name is Pat Keenan. I am joined today by Ryan Nelson, Andrew Barger, Jason Lasasso, and we welcome back Hollywood Kenji Klein. How you doing, Kenji?
Get a couple news interviews and you're all paparazzi'd out. Huh?
So tell us about that. First of all, what you were on a news segment, correct?
Yeah. So it was just two like little back to back kind of things. I got asked to be an interview related to the popularity of disc golf during COVID times and how much it's exploded because it's a easily played, socially distant activity you can do outside for that doesn't cost anything. So one of the local news stations reached out to us and asked if they could do an interview. I'm like, oh yeah, sure. They were doing, it was just like a young kid interviewer with a phone, and they're learning how to do like everything themselves, shoot it, edit it, and you know, and they made a little piece. There was four other people with me, but they kind of got cut out. I felt bad. I wanted to show more at Jamin because he can throw much better than I can.
Well, they wanted to show how anybody could go out there and throw it.
Right, exactly. That's the right angle, Pat. And then the following week after that aired, we had a ribbon-cutting ceremony with the mayor of Troy on a new course we've been working on.
Was that Prospect Park?
Yeah, the Prospect Park in Troy.
Yeah, which is just incredible. I mean, like the amount of publicity that got, where you've got a mayor coming out. I mean, you guys rolled out a podium into the middle of a field.
Yeah. It was nice. I was throwing shots with the mayor, one of the county executive, one of the county board members, who else, the city planner, and a few other movers and shakers. So it's good. That kind of exposure gets us more courses.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Great job.
Yeah.
Thank you. Man. Because after that stuff aired, we got like four calls for about new courses to be developed.
What?
Yeah.
Wow. That is so awesome.
Let me ask you, though, Ryan, you're in an area that is saturated with courses. Can it be a bad thing?
Oh, no. I don't think there can be enough. I would say there could be, I'd say maybe easier courses. Mm-hmm. Like, I think half the problem, at least in the city of Easton, where I am, is our local course, Hackett Park, is like, it's a beast, you know, like it's not a great course for welcoming new players and especially like kids to the game.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there could definitely be a course in Easton that is like a nine hole, you know, like white level course that's 200 feet, you know, holes are 200 feet.
That's exactly what the place in Troy is. It's nice.
Yeah,
we put in white tees first, nine holes. Mm-hmm, that's mm-hmm. where we're starting from. It's got room to expand.
Right. That's awesome because that's how you get new people interested. I don't think it's a bad thing at all. I mean,
I don't believe so either. I was just trying to mix it up, Ryan. You know, I was doing my, you know, trying to get a little. Kenji, now what about that TikTok? What did you do there?
About the what? TikTok? I have no idea what TikTok is. I don't have a TikTok.
So the first thing I really want to talk about is the Lost Valley Open. But before we do that, before I forget, we gotta get these freaking Ledgestone picks done. Because Ledgestone ended.
Oh, Ledgestone. That was forever ago.
Yeah. Give me 2 seconds.
We did Ledgestone picks.
I don't remember what my picks were. Haley, I know I had Missy Gannon and Paige, and I think Sarah. I don't know what the results. And then, would I have?
Yeah, what I said last time was like, I can't wait for Pat to tell me who I picked.
I don't recall.
I have no idea.
Kenji, there's been like a couple times where I've played or like been around people who are like discat folks.
Yeah,
and they're like, "Oh yeah, have you played J Park?" And like slyly, I'm like, yeah, I played J Park. I played with Kenji. He like took me out.
Gave me the grand tour. We played every hole on the course.
It was like a private thing. He showed me all like the news holes. No big deal. Yeah, I know Kenji.
I have so many people coming up to, oh, hey Kenji. I'm like, have I met you yet?
Good for all right, you, man. So Just a refresher, the Ledgestone, which was like a year ago, the MPO winners, it was Ricky, Paul, and Chris Dickerson. And in the FPO, we had Katrina Allen, Paige Pierce, and Heather Young. All right. Kenji, I don't actually have one for you. That might have been one where I asked you to send it to me via text or something. And I didn't
The last one I was on record, I don't recall what tournament that was. But it was like,
yeah, I think we might have done that. But you can play the part of Brian.
All right. No, we made good picks.
That was right. Accepted.
So, yeah, these are in no particular order. We're going to start with Andrew. These are his MPO picks.
So in third place, I'm going to pick Chris Dickerson. Boom.
Whoa.
Second place, I'm going to go with Adam Jones. And to win...
Do you mean the hybrid that is Adam Hammes and Kevin Jones?
My bad. I'm like, they're right next to each other in the rings. Kevin Jones. And to win, I'm going to pick Paul.
All right. So according to that, you got a point for Macbeth. He podiumed.
And Chris?
Oh, you know why? Because I wrote Chris Pick. No, and you had him in third, so you get two more points. I'm sorry.
Ooh. Nice.
Wow.
See, that's why you all. So that's one for Macbeth and two. So you're at 3 points. Jeez. And here is your FPO.
And for FPO, I'm going to go with Jennifer Allen for third, Paige Pierce for second, and Missy Gannon for first place.
Now, again, you got Paige Pierce, and you got the bonus for two extra points for picking her. Instead. So that means you have three for her, and then 3 6-points, Andrew.
All right.
That's, like, really good. I don't know if anybody's going to beat that.
That's a tough one, man. I should have started you. I should have made you last.
It's a race for second now.
Yeah. Let's go to Ryan Nelson, his MPO picks.
I'm going to go with Emerson Keith in third place. I will take, got to go for some fun picks there. I think that's as fun as I'll go. I'll pick Heimberg for second. I think he's been kind of slumping these last two tournaments. And for first place, I will take Chris Dickerson. All right.
Yeah, well done.
All right. So 5 points. In the FPO, we hearing it. All right, here we go.
And let's see. For the FPO, third place. I'll take Missy Gannon, third. I'll take Hokum for second. And just because somebody's got to pick her one of these days, Katrina Allen for first place.
Yeah, baby.
She needs a boost. She needs a win here.
5 points, though. 4 for her. For 3 for Qualm first, 1 for podium, so 4, and then 1 for Chris Dickerson. Put you at 5, put you in a solid second.
Solid second. Beat Andrew, though. Yeah.
All right, Jason, your MPO.
All right, MPO, third place, I'll pick Kevin Jones. Second, Ricky, and first, I'll go Paul Macbeth.
All right, now if you would swap those two, man. As it stands, you only got 2 points for those. Because... Nice.
Oh, man, though.
Two good points.
Two good points. Okay, and FPO.
And for FPO, third place, Missy. Second place, Katrina Allen. And first place, I'll go Paige Pierce.
I hate to repeat myself, but, dude, damn. If you would swap those two. Man, so you got 4 picks, but 4 points.
Wow.
And Kenji, here are your picks.
Third place, so I'm going to go...
Kenji, what happened to your voice?
I'm trying not to pick the same one anybody else picked, so it's going to be hard. I'm going to go with Matt Bell in third, Double G in second, and Ricky to win it.
Yeah!
Wow. Ricky!
Ricky, baby!
There's 4 points.
Yeah, Brian, a.k.a. Kenji.
So he needs 2 points. Kenji, you need 2 points to beat Andrew.
Watch Kenji win.
FPO, I'm gonna go with Widboom.
Oh wait.
FPO, I'm gonna go with Widboom for third. I think she's gonna ride her high into this. Missy second. And I go Paige.
Oh, a reluctant Paige.
Wild card.
I want to pick someone else, but I think she's got a chip on her shoulder now.
All right. That chip got her second place. all right. So that's good. So now, you guys, do you remember what picks you gave me? I wrote them all down except for Kenji's because this came later. But do you guys remember the picks that you gave me for?
I can bring it up real quick.
Okay. Yeah. If you guys take a second to do that. And
oh, yeah.
We'll just get them on record because we did get them before the tournament started, before Brinster's ace.
And Paul's.
And Paul's, yeah.
Paul had one?
Yep, yeah, hole eight.
Hole eight.
The one across the pond.
The water carry.
Okay. That's a good
Not the really nice. Dangerous water carry, the less dangerous
right,
one.
Right. I watched Kevin's today, and after like I've played that hole a couple times, and to be honest, like I didn't think that like getting to the circle was possible. I was I remember like being on that tee box and being like, no fucking way.
Right. Right. This is a par three.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's a par four if you play from the blue, I think it is. And so that's the one that I threw it in for two, but I was OB on my, you know.
Oh, you said
on the drive. Yeah.
On the left side?
Yeah. On the left side, like right in that little swamp there. And I threw it in from there. And I was
good
like,
shot,
I felt so pumped to get birdie on that hole. But I mean, that was with a fantastic drive, and I narrowly missed like, I don't know, eight trees.
Right, right.
It's just, that was such a stupid shot. I just can't believe it.
I mean, he just like, he threw it straight for 530 feet.
Yeah, it's so bizarre because it, you know, it starts off on like a, I don't know, 30 degree angle and then stands up and goes 30 degrees the other way and comes back. Like you can't needle that any better. No. You know, it's like one in a million. It's unbelievable.
He made it clean the whole way too. Like it didn't brush the branches on the top, right?
No,
oh, it was so
like,
clean.
Yeah. It didn't move like 6 feet left or right of where it was headed the entire way. It's just unbelievable.
Made the fairway seem way wider than I remember.
I know.
I know.
Yeah, I'm happy to reach the short basket on that hole.
For sure.
Yep, absolutely.
Okay, so just to get him, let me get yours first.
All right, so let's go with the ladies first. For FPO, I have Paige taking first place. I have Haley taking second place.
Nice.
And I have Sarah Holcomb taking third.
That's Haley King, right?
Yes.
And who would you say third?
Pat, talking to your mic. Holcomb.
I'm sorry, what?
Sarah Holcomb.
Sarah Holcomb, okay, thank you.
And then for MPO, I have Paul taking first, Kevin taking second, and Simon, because Maple Hill pretty much is like home course now, coming up for third, although he didn't play too well today.
Yeah.
All right, Andrew, who you got?
So for the women's division, I have Paige in first, Haley King in second, and Missy Gannon coming in third. For the men, I have Kevin Jones for first place, Paul McBeth for second, and Calvin Heinberg for third.
All right, Jason, what do you got?
All right, for the ladies, Paige Pierce taking it down, followed by Paige Hsu. Who's at least not in the tournament?
Mulligan.
followed by Katrina Allen in third. And for MPO, I think Paul was shooting pretty good. So I'm going to go with him to take it. And then followed by Kevin Jones and James Conrad in third.
All right. And who do you got, Ryan?
Yeah, starting with the ladies, I'll go with Paige in third. Hokum second and Katrina Allen in first. See if she can give me another 4 points there. And I had the same logic with as Kenji. I thought Simon had a pretty good chance at least to come in third. You know,
he's been playing Maple a lot.
I know. You'd think. I mean, he played it in all seasons. You'd think that he'd be dialed in. But what did he shoot today? Like, I don't know. One up. I saw.
Yeah, it's all right. Even or one over.
Oh Lord. Rough. And then I picked Nico because I figured, you know, he's the old veteran. He's been here. He's played here 15 years in a row or something like that. Nope. He didn't have a great round. And then I picked Heinberg for first. and who also didn't perform too well. So I'm riding everything on Katrina and Sarah Hokum right now.
Okay, now I am contemplating a Paul Page, like minus a point if you pick him.
Wow, I love
Ooh,
that.
Oh, yeah, that's fair.
What do you
think? Only if you pick him for first. So if you pick him in second or third, you can still get the point.
Ooh, gutsy.
So how many points would that be for first place if you pick him? He would get how many points?
You get three then.
Three instead of four.
Instead of four, okay. Yeah. And in second place?
Three.
You get three.
Okay. Yeah. No, that's cool. Yeah. Okay. And then the same with Paige. You guys cool with that?
I think that's fair.
I think that's very fair. Yep.
What about, so we'll start it with this one. Okay. I'm going to hopefully, it'd be fun to keep track of these for a bit. So I'll try. I'll do my best on this.
I mean, honestly, like, I'm not sure if there's a tournament where I think Paul Macbeth would not finish in the top three, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. It's like, you know, it'd be silly not to put him at least in third,
right.
Most anything. But
unless he like wasn't playing,
and it'd be worth.
And even then, I still might pick him.
Well, he's no Pete too. All right. Quick question, Jason. Last week you mentioned was it a Lloyd Lima rule? Does that sound familiar?
What?
No, am I crazy?
The Lloyd Lima rule.
Yeah, they got initiated this year, right?
What is that?
Like, you can't be a 750 player signing up for MPO in a disc golf pro tour event.
Good. That's a good rule. That's a good rule.
It's like a ratings minimum.
I think it's still pretty low, though. I feel like it's 900.
I think it's like maybe 850 or something, right?
Yeah. Because they don't want people like backing up the holes.
And I imagine it's like pretty distracting for like a pro player to like not be able to get in the rhythm because
to play with somebody
some jabroni is like taking eight strokes on every hole.
You guys ever read anything about Lloyd Wima?
No,
I
a little bit, but just that he played a lot of events and that he really wasn't very good.
Yeah, he's kind of like a record chaser. It seems like he's like all about obscure sports and stuff. Man, I read this article a while ago, but yeah, he's just like all about playing strange sports and trying them out.
Okay, so go right to MPO division.
that's like what he does.
I feel like that's like pretty ballsy to like, oh, I'm going to try a sport and then try to compete at the top of the top level.
He's just playing like I don't know.
It's still like, I mean, you're like in the competition.
Right.
You signed up. I don't know.
Well, he also does TED Talks. So maybe this is just content and fodder for his next TED Talk.
I didn't know he did TED Talks. He's from like Texas or something down south, right?
Oh, possibly. I don't know. This is a story that nobody, I think, really dug into.
No. Fair. Yeah, very fair.
Forum post about it on Disc Golf Course Review.
All right. You guys want to do some talk about the Lost Valley Open coverage?
Yeah, let's do it. Deep
media.
Some people do.
I'm very interested because I have a lot. I have a lot to say about this, and it's interesting. I thoroughly enjoyed it. But first of all, Ryan, I have a couple of technical questions. First of all,
okay.
I just want to say first of all, one more time. what? First of all,
got him.
Second of all,
did they film every hole on your round?
They did, yes.
So I heard something about, or maybe I read it in the comments about a full thing coming out for. Are they going to do both of those? Are they going to put out a full lead card and a full chase card coverage?
I don't think so. I think that this was their they're kind of trying to do something special for Discmania because this is like a Discmania event, and you know this is the first time you've ever seen somebody do a sort of hybrid chase and lead card in a single a single video.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I thought it was good in some ways. What do you think?
Definitely gonna talk about that.
Oh, okay, cool.
No, I just want to get some stuff on the technical stuff.
Yeah, they recorded every single one of my shots, trust me. I felt all the pressure.
Well, my question is, like, how did it slow you down, and how do they do that? Really, just if you could walk me through a process of one hole, that would be great. As far as how long does it take to get them set up? How does it slow you guys down? That kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I feel like it didn't slow the rate of play down at all. For the most part, there was enough time for the chase camera to get in position as we were walking to the hole, and there were, you know, I mean, I think both courses, LVO courses, Steel Club and AGA, are well designed, so you don't have a lot of backups. So for the most part, like, you might come and meet a group, and by the time you're ready to tee off, the chase camera operator's already in his place. And for the most part, like, you know, I'd walk up to my lie and I'd take my full 30 seconds because mm-hmm. I was nervous. And you know, by the time I was ready to throw, there was a camera behind me. So it really didn't disrupt the pace of play at all, from what I could tell. Awesome.
Mm-hmm. And how many people filming per hole? Was it like one, two?
They had two. Yeah, two per hole. I think the lead may have had more, but we had one guy doing chase and one guy filming the tee and the you know, the shots on the fairway.
So my first question about the round was actually going to be the missed putt on the camera. That was nerves 100%. The first on hole one.
Yeah, hole one was a disaster. I was trying to play literally like a bailout shot to the left and just get my par, and I threw it right into the ground. And then, the putt just didn't feel right. It's like, you know, when you get nervous and like your limbs feel kind of like wobbly, that's sort of what happened.
Yeah. You feel like you got no grip, right? It just kind of blah.
Yeah. It just kind of blows out of your hand. Yep. And I have a very soft putt, as Steve Breaux would tell you on the coverage. So when my arms are wobbly, it gets even softer. So yes, that was all nerves for sure. That being said, I have never birdied that hole, nor do I ever. I don't think that I could. I would never try it in a tournament because it's a very far shot. And if I were to try to get to the basket, I would have to throw like a very understable destroyer or my monarch, which is like a -4 turn on a hyzer to the left and get it to turn right towards the basket, because all the stuff on the right at AGA and hole one is just like, you can't go in there. It's you're doomed. So it would be a very tough shot for me to get all the way out to. I've never really even attempted it. I just play a bailout to the left and then just get my par. Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Now, that there seemed to be a lot of open. Was wind a factor at all? It didn't look like it, but you never know, really.
There was a little bit of wind. I wouldn't say too much, though. No, it was a great day. I mean, it was definitely humid, so I think grip was a little bit of an issue. But for the most part, it was pretty great conditions.
And was this was the second day of the tournament?
Yes. Yeah. Second day. Three-day tournament.
I'm sorry. Did you know that you were going to be on coverage?
I did not. No.
Okay.
Then you made lead card until you got there.
Well, I made chase, and I didn't know that they were filming chase. I thought that they were just doing lead. So I was just
filming
like
chase.
Yeah, yeah. So because I was tied for seventh, I guess, and I geeked it out over like Felicki just because I had a lower PDGA number.
Oh.
yeah, it's okay. He made the lead card.
Yeah,
nice. He had
a decent.
He had a great showing. So I didn't. I went into the day, and actually it was funny because like one of my buddies, Kenny Cabo, he's just like, I walk up, he's like, "That's what you're wearing? You're gonna be on camera?" I'm like,
camera today? Where's your uniform, bro?
I was thinking if you were gonna wear a t-shirt, at least wear a beacon t-shirt.
Yeah. I've got one. Do you know how many times I've like thought about being on coverage and I'm like, oh, I'm gonna wear my sweet orange Beacon Blaze shirt.
Speaking of, now, was that the putter that I saw basically leaning against the pole every hole that they didn't show you, they would just be sitting there while other people are putting? Was that the one that I traded you?
That's the zone you gave me, Pat.
Yeah.
So it was on coverage. I wanted to make sure. I told my wife that was my disc. Come here. That's my disc. What was? It's not. But did you take the opportunity that you were on a card with Andrew Fish to tell him that putter you got by trading one of his discs to me?
I didn't. Honestly.
The podcast. I was worth him off.
Oh no, that's funny.
I thought about it just while watching.
I didn't. I actually didn't do any fanboying out, at least on my card. I mean,
that must have been tough, you know, because those are some really good players.
Yeah, they are. And like, you know, Fish has like an ultimate background. I have an ultimate background, but I didn't want to distract him from his game. Or anything like that. So I just kind of tried to keep it low key, crack a joke here and there, just be chill, you know?
So at that level, is there not much conversation? Is everybody just kind of quiet?
No, I would say it depends on the person. You know, Casey White likes to talk. So he was, he was pretty chatty. We were talking a little bit. Fish talks to his caddy a lot, and actually his caddy, Rick Sassaman, I know very well, where he's me and him go neck and neck all the time down here in PA, and so we actually just played a tournament last weekend together where we were on the same card both rounds. So I know Rick really well, which is actually kind of nice because I felt like I had a pseudo caddy with me the entire round.
Fish, can I borrow your caddy?
So he was definitely doing double duty. Fish, you know, he's all about the game. But everybody was super nice. You know, I think the vibe on the card was excellent pretty much the entire time. Although Fish did call a foot fault on Dustin at one point, and Casey seconded it. So that was a little awkward.
If it happens, it happens. Like, you gotta get by that awkwardness, you know, you just gotta accept you did it.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, they got by it, I think, by the end of the tournament or by the end of the day. But, honestly, it's funny because I don't really, I've only started playing pro this year or MPO this year. So I don't pay attention that much to like foot faults or anything like that. So now I feel like I have to pay much more attention so that when somebody looks at me like, are you going to second it? I'm like, ready, you know?
Right.
And I've never really thought about that.
Could you tell us what happened? Was it like a second shot in a fairway or something? Was it like a run up?
Yeah, it was. So we were on some hole in the back nine. It was one of the three holes, I think, that I had the box the entire round.
Let's go.
Yeah, let's go. And it was the second shot. It was an upshot on the fairway. And it's a hole that everybody should get. If you're in that division, right. It's just like there's OB left and right, but you have to throw like a 350 foot hyzer and then another 350 foot hyzer, and that's it. And so he apparently stepped on his disc, on his up, on his second shot. And so Fish called it and then he was just like, Casey. And Casey's like, yeah. So,
like reluctantly,
Well, it's funny because they're both on disc, they're both sponsored by Disc Media. Right. So you think there would be a conflict, but no, Casey, Casey's an honorable guy. He seconded it. But again, honestly, and it wasn't on the coverage. So I couldn't even tell you whether it was a real foot fault or not, because I was not paying attention and I feel bad about that. So that's why I feel like like I should be paying attention more to my card mates and what they're doing.
Well, those ones forward, I think, are pretty easy, because if they plant and you see that disc go up, they're obviously stepped on it.
Yeah, I just wasn't paying attention. I was a little bit in the moment, just focusing on my own shot. I had just I was first to throw my second shot and I parked it, so I was feeling pretty good.
Nice.
Well, Ryan, I think I speak for I'm going to go ahead and say I speak for the Beacon Glades Disc Golf Club in that we're so proud of you, man. Making coverage and I watched it. A lot of folks that I know at the club watched it.
You put out on hole 11 right now.
Yeah, and even like despite I think maybe you feeling that you didn't have the round that you wanted. Mm-hmm. I thought you had a lot of like fucking awesome shots out there, man. And So way to go.
Thank you. Thank you, Andrew. Yeah. I appreciate that. Yeah. I mean, I watched the coverage and honestly, like, you know, Dustin too was like stoked on like my zone up shots and he was very complimentary. So I was like, yeah, I felt pretty good about the round. I mean, I did shoot above my rating, even if it was That's only, awesome. You know, 10 points above or something like that. But yeah, it's just like stupid mistakes, like hole three and four, like hole two. I was so pumped to get a birdie. I knew I had to, you know, come back after hole one. So after hole two, I got that birdie. And it's such a tough hole because you have to go at least the way I play it, you have to go up over the out of bounds and then back like over the cornfields and then into the green. And then I had to bang like a 28 footer to get my birdie. So as soon as that happened, I was like, yeah, I'm back on track. And then the next two holes, I went out of bounds literally by a centimeter on hole three and then 8 inches or like a foot on hole four. And I, you know, got bogeys both holes. So it was just a really rough way to start, you know, bogey, birdie, bogey, bogey. But I felt a lot better after they, like on the back nine, I felt much more like I was playing my game and I wasn't trying to like, what I found was that, especially like on hole four, you can kind of see it. Everybody else was playing these. So hole four, it's a par four. It's a very straight hole. It's about 700 feet. And the shot off the tee, you just need to go between two trees, you know, a wall of trees on left and right over a creek that are about maybe 70, 80 feet off the fairway. And it's pretty wide. But you can't go left, which is where the OB is. And you don't want to go too far right because you get some high grass and some stuff there. And they were all throwing these really massive, like I'd say full flex shots where they go at, you know, through the tunnel and then a little bit of a turn to the right and then land in the middle of the fairway. And like, for some reason in my mind, I'm like, oh, I'm going to do that too. But I had a Thunderbird in my hand.
Oh, then.
And so I threw it like the perfect line, but of course it didn't turn. It just like stayed straight and then went left at the end. I'm like, what am I doing? That's not the shot that I wanted. That's not the shot that I planned for. My Thunderbird never turns. Like, what am I thinking? You know? So you just kind of get in your head a little bit, looking at what everybody else is doing.
Right.
So that was the most challenging thing. It was like just trying to focus on, you know, how I practice the course and how I, you know, how I know I can shoot there. So yeah, it's tough, man, but I feel like I'm ready for the next time it happens, if it happens. You know what I mean?
Definitely.
Oh, yeah. I mean, maybe not with your clothes or anything, but, you know. hole nine, they didn't show that shot. He talked about it on hole nine. How did you feel about that, that it didn't get up there? Were you waiting for it? I mean, was it that impressive of a shot that you were like, oh, I can't wait to see
him? Yeah, no, it was. There was really only two shots that I was excited to see, as sad as that is, maybe three. I was excited to see my drive on hole two. And then I was excited to see my upshot on hole nine, because that's actually, so hole nine, you have to, I've made that mistake plenty of times. So I know how to get to the green from the right side of the fairway. And if you see it, it's basically a wall of trees, but there's a little bit of a gap to the right side. And so literally two or three of my practice rounds, I ended up too far right on the fairway and I threw my most overstable Firebird on a hyzer that went right through the gap on the right side and skipped up to the basket. And I did it like three times. So I really wanted to see it on coverage because I thought it was like a great shot. And, you know, they only caught my putt, which is kind of disappointing. But the other shot that I was excited to see was after the runway hole, which is like the par four that has – it's like a big, long piece of grass with the runway on the right, which apparently used to be you know, it's an airplane runway, but also they used to do drag races there back in the day. So OB on the right, OB on the left, and you've got a – and the green is an island. So that one's really tough, but – the hole after that, which is just kind of like a, it's a par four, it's long. It kind of, there's OB on the right side. And so you have to kind of hug the left side of the fairway. And the green is tucked behind a wall of trees on the left side. But there's this tiny gap that if you end up short on the left side, you can go through to get to the basket. And so I threw like a zone flick that must have been a 200-foot shot. And I hit a gap that was like, I don't know, maybe 10 feet, 20 feet wide at the end of its flight that fish had just missed. So I was like so pumped to see that one on coverage, because that was like, that was probably the shot I was the most proud of that whole day. And I got my birdie there.
Awesome.
Yeah, it was sweet.
I'm literally watching that what you're talking about now. Like you just finished, I just got it on the background here. You just finished on 12, the Island Green. So I'll get to see that shot in just a second.
Oh man, I can't tell you how like small that gap is that you have to hit.
Okay. There were two other things I wanted to talk about. First of all, commercials. One of them was in like it was on the video, and the other was just a pop-up commercial. The first commercial, did you guys see the Birdie Fuel commercial?
Yes.
Yes.
Let's go Birdie Fuel.
Yeah, I buy some Birdie Fuel.
The guy in the commercial, so I'm sitting there and I watch it, I'm like, whoa, what, that's Keith.
Yeah.
Keith Elgar from Element Discs. I really wanted to ask him. I got to talk to him about it at some point, because that's crazy. But I want to know how many times it took him to make that putt. I have to ask him that. And the other one, I don't know. This one could be a YouTube one, and it could be random. But did anybody get the commercial for bare knuckle fighting?
No.
Okay.
I think that was a targeted ad, Pat.
Probably. Well, it goes, you'll see how it's weird. It's in the commercial. It said bare knuckle fighting is the fastest growing sport.
Is it?
My question is, what does disc golfers, because that's the thing I'm hearing, it's the fastest growing sport, disc golf, blah, blah, blah. What criterion do these people use? What do disc golfers use, and what does bare knuckle fighting use?
To just dude sports?
Yeah, but
you're saying how do they come to the determination that they're the fastest growing sport? Yeah. Maybe it's based off of YouTube or Google search engine statistics.
Yeah.
Maybe there's a lot of people searching bare knuckle fighting.
Just a question. What about the Gatekeeper Rewind? I kind of dug that with the old school like 80s VCR kind of rewind thing.
Into it.
I really like that.
So down.
Anything that like I can see like the putt or the shot again, I'm for it. More replays. I want to see like more replayed shots, because all those shots are so good, you know? Yeah. Maybe I'm just getting greedy.
I don't know. Sometimes I'll hit that jump back 15 seconds and watch it again.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, you know, but that takes like a little like hand movement and like a click back. Like I'm trying to avoid that.
Minimal effort on my enjoyment.
Yeah. You got it.
Jason, did you watch any of it?
Yeah, I watched it all. It was great.
What did you think of my disc out there when it was under the basket?
I didn't notice yours either, Pat. Sorry.
I think it was there all a whole nine when we weren't seeing Ryan's shot. It was just leaning up against the basket.
I'm gonna have to rewatch it.
I literally just watched it, and I still don't recall it.
Whenever you're bragging about his approach,
it's the orange disc I threw on pretty much every single hole.
Yeah, that disc hit the tree on hole 10 at Beacon many a time on a wide hyzer line.
Very true. Very true.
Yeah, Ryan, I thought you played really well. I was really impressed.
Thank you, Jason. Not as good as my first round. Oh, I didn't even tell you about my third round. It was a disaster. So hole one at the Steel Club, where I had just shot seven down. I started off the round with a quadruple bogey on hole one.
Oh my God.
Say it ain't so, man.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It was the roughest.
Because you fought so hard in that second round, just to keep your head above water, and sorry to point out.
Getting some background noise. Kenji, are you on a mic or is that your computer speaker?
That's me. I'm sorry. My wife and my mother-in-law just came in.
God. Okay. Oh, man.
Paparazzi in the background.
Exactly.
He's a popular guy.
Here, hold on a second. I'll go to the back room. I was sitting in the living room.
Yeah, so hole one, I like, basically, I threw my drive into a bunch of trees on the left. Like, I just kind of slipped out of my hands. And so I was under this pine tree, and the limbs were really low. So I tried to roll out, like throw a forehand roller out, and it like cut down the fairway in the wrong direction. And so I threw my upshot trying to get to the basket, which is right behind a sand bunker. So like, I didn't really commit to it. So I had like a 30-foot putt. And then I tried to save my bogey, I guess. And then it hit the cage and rolled down into the sand trap for an out-of-bounds stroke. Ooh. And then I missed that putt and tapped it for 7. So that was like, oh, well, this is going to be a horrible round. I've got 4 strokes to make up to start on hole 2. So, yeah, it didn't really go the way that I planned. But at least the first 2 rounds weren't terrible.
Now, going back, you guys started talking about it earlier, going back to the coverage itself, as far as the having intersplicing the chase card and the lead card, what did you guys think of that?
I mean, I'm glad I got to see more disc golfers play. At the same time, I think I'm like committed enough to disc golf to really want to watch every single shot on every single hole. And so that for me was like a little distracting. Because it would be like, okay, the guys like throw off, they have good tee shots, like maybe some bad tee shots, but like the next, you know, cut, be like, all right, people are putting now. I'm like, oh man, like I want to see those upshots.
I also didn't like how they did the flyover after you saw the chase card play it.
I think that was a sacrifice for speed.
Right. I would have preferred to see like both groups play the hole.
Yes.
With a flyover before the chase card and show all the shots.
Yeah. I was going to say that too.
Right. I wouldn't mind seeing all the chase card either.
Oh, absolutely.
But would you wait another day to get the inner spliced and, you know what I mean? Or another 2 days for coverage, or do you want it?
Yeah, because literally I'm so behind on watching videos. I only pick and choose. I usually just watch a final round. You know, mm-hmm. I don't get to see all the coverage, and I'll go back and watch other stuff. Like, I had only watched the front 9. I hadn't watched the back 9 a year round yet, Ryan. That's why I had it on in the living room while I was talking.
Yeah, I just don't see what advantage that format gives you rather than releasing the chase and the lead separately. Because, like, you know, most of the time you're going to watch the lead, right? And then if you've got spare time, you'll watch the chase. So, like... Oh. Yeah. If anything, you're like as a YouTube content producer, you get more views per video if you do it the traditional way. So like what was the benefit of doing it in this mixed up fashion? Like does it make the coverage better? Is it a more enjoyable experience if you see 8 versus 4 shots?
I would kind of dig especially if it was an exciting round where somebody on the chase card was doing something, I would really think that I'd want to have that person followed for that specific reason. I don't know if you're going to go out there and film the second card if you're not going to use, you know what I mean?
That's true. And Fish and Dustin had excellent rounds. By the way, I haven't said this yet. Dustin Keegan shot. I mean, Fish's shots were all incredible. His roller on hole one was just like absurd. You know, I've been thinking about myself the whole time. Watching these guys play is like it's absurd. like there's a whole 16 is like this 400-foot uphill shot, just a straight. You know, you're going uphill and the basket's right there, and it's literally right in front of you, and there's just like trees on both sides. I cannot reach that basket. It's probably a 450-foot shot. At least if I ever get pin high, I'm 50 feet, 60 feet to the right or left of it. Fish parks that hole with like the easiest hyzer I've ever seen in my entire life. And I'm just like, what am I doing on this card? You know? But the most impressive shot, and Kenji, you're going to come up to it soon, is on hole 17, Dustin Keegan lands in the hazard, takes like a meter relief, And he's probably, I don't know, 450 feet from the basket. And the basket is on a mound, like a peninsula mound that's probably 20 feet high. And he throws a flex shot that goes like, I don't know, 150 feet high to the left, drifts to the right, and just slams down maybe 5 feet next to the basket on the hill.
Wow.
Like I have never seen a more like impeccable shot in my entire life. Like my jaw just absolutely dropped. It was unbelievable. It's just like playing with these guys, they can just control their angles and can throw so hard and so accurately. It's absolutely absurd.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I've had the pleasure of playing with Dustin a couple of times, and it's a humbling experience just watching him forehand, backhand, whatever. It's like, wow.
Yeah. It's just so it's so clean.
And yeah, like the distance they can throw too is insane. Just, I don't know. Makes me just feel like I can't throw at all.
And you guys are open players.
Yeah. Well,
not like the rest of us here. Like my rating just tanked this week because I didn't play any tournaments this year.
Yeah. I was going to ask that next. So not everybody gets a rating, I guess, when they do those. No, not everybody gets an update at the same time. Is that how it works?
It all depends on what you played.
Yeah, if you played a tournament that became official since the last rating update, then you'll get an update.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So if you don't, you just... Okay, so I have...
I think there's also... if you have more than 10 rounds...
I'm blaming you, Jason, for my rating tank. For successfully pulling off mind kill, because then I lost... I went from like 28 rounds down to... Or 18 rounds down to 8, and it changed my rating by 20 points. Went from 902 to 880.
Yeah. I just realized after mind kill that mind kill was the first PGA event I've played in 14 months.
Whoa. And,
yeah. So basically I think the rating will go by the last 8 rounds or 12 months. So if I play another 6 rounds, then that's going to be like a fresh new rating, which is crazy for me, but.
But you got a bump there. I'm looking 960. That's right.
Yeah.
Very nice.
I'll take it.
Remember, Ryan, remember the days when you were 960?
Last week?
Those were the days.
Yeah, you went up 9 points. That's pretty impressive at that high level. You were just talking about it last time, how difficult it is once you get up to those levels, and you just went 9 points. That's
yeah, good. I got a 9-point bump. But Jason's been up there before. Jason's been in those 970s. Those.
Yeah.
From what I hear, he's retired, so...
Your rating lags too. So, let's say you're past 12 months. If you play a lot of tournaments, then it's lagging 6 to 12 months. So you could be playing 1,000 rated golf and it's going to take months for that to catch up. So,
right.
Yeah, yeah. That's true. Right. You're only as good as your last year.
Yeah.
Or whatever. Oh, speaking of averages, so the handicap round, Ryan, the Friday antisocial, just real quick. I figured out how the handicaps work.
Ooh, I'm curious. Yeah. So how does it work?
So, It basically, where is it at? I thought I wrote it down. Okay. You take your last 5 rounds, you drop the best and the worst, and then you take the average. So it rolls. Mm-hmm. Like right now, today was my 6th round. So my 1st round goes away now.
Okay.
So it's the most current of it.
So your most recent 5 rounds, drop the top and the worst and take the average of the remaining 3. Interesting. Okay. That makes sense. That seems fair.
Yeah, well, we were talking about it today because golf is a lot different with handicaps because the courses get a rating and your handicap can this, that, and the other. But with this, it's really just this is your handicap at Beacon. You know what
right.
I mean?
Right, right.
And for this layout at Beacon, you know? So, but you could probably use that layout. That's a pretty good amalgamation that you could probably play any layout and the handicap will be pretty accurate within a stroke or two. How'd you shoot today, Andrew?
I actually shot my personal best at Beacon today.
Wow. Congratulations. Yeah,
thank you. Thank you. I shot 4 down, we started on 5 and I had like a really disappointing, I was sitting at 5 under, going into like 1, 2, 3, 4. which I felt pretty confident about, like, oh, I can par these holes.
Yeah, sure.
And I took a pretty disappointing bogey on hole two. I, like, the wind was blowing. I kind of, like, hooked it to the right. I had, like, a good upshot, I thought, but I was still maybe, like, 15 feet away. And my putt, just, like, the wind took it, and I just hit the cage. I was really disappointed, but still, like, really happy with four down.
That hole two's basket is deceivingly tricky to get an upshot to stick on, because it kind of does slope down on the back.
Right.
So, like, if you're to the right near the tree there with the tire swing, and you're trying to, like, you know, just pitch something up to the basket, sometimes it can get a little wild and roll on you.
That's exactly what happened, man. Yep. That's exactly what happened.
And I believe, like, it. Yep.
And, you know, putting from, like, behind the basket is never really good for me, because, like, there's some branches in the way, there's, like, some bushes in the way, and, you know, definitely not where I want to be putting, but I was close enough that I should have just put it in.
And then you didn't get three or four. What position was three in?
You know, so we're playing three short, and
on the right side or left side?
On, I guess, the left. The
left one near side. The tree on the left.
The short one, yeah.
Closest to the garden, yeah.
And this is embarrassing to tell, but I birdied that hole for the first time maybe like 2 weeks ago.
Oh, wow.
I have never been able to just, like, get it up there. And I had a look today, like, in the circle. I was kind of under the tree with the low ceiling and had to, like, kind of kneel out. And I caged it again. So I left some strokes out there, but still, I was stoked at four down.
Yeah, it's solid.
Do you guys want to see Andrew's handicap change in real time?
Oh, no.
He had his handicap was minus one going into today. Andrew just shot four down, so that would be a 59?
Correct.
That minus one has now become, oh, that's depressing, minus 1.5.
I'll take it. Every time, like, when I, the other day when you posted kind of like the list of everyone's handicap, I thought I was in some, like, pretty good company, like, close to the top. I was like,
there's not many in the red.
Sweet.
You got Eric, Monroe, Dan, and you. And Rush is probably going to be there.
Yeah, he should.
But no, that's awesome.
Thanks, man.
Minus 1.5. Well, I'll tell you. Well, never mind. I won't.
Can I share a good play story? I cashed his Cali yesterday. I was very excited.
Woo! Yeah. KJ!
Where at?
Central Park doubles. I shot six down his Cali. I was very happy with my
play. Good work.
And that's with one putt. That's like, I missed. I had two drives that made it in the circle and missed both putts from like 30 feet out. I was so disappointed. My most common miss is always dead center, 2 inches low, back four in a row. Two holes. And then I had one that hit sweet spot and came right out the back. So I really should have been one more down, but can't complain.
Now, when you play Cali, I mean, I feel like the toughest thing about playing Cali is – I barely carry any discs. I've got like one of everything. Yep. And I hate it when I play Cali because, like, you get, you know, you're not prepared for it.
I so, like, have when I, almost two of most of the molds that I play.
Okay.
You know, they're a little bit different in stability, but I have two sidewinders. I have two katanas. I have three rocks. I have two magnets.
All you have to do, Ryan, and this—I guarantee this will work. You'll never have to be Cali again. Just grab a small bag and put a Cali bag together that you can just throw into your backpack at any point, and that way you'll never be called again because you'll be prepared.
You'll be prepared. Yeah, like, I feel like my ideal Cali bag doesn't, like, because I have the same thing where I have like set of T-birds, set of Firebirds, set of rocks, et cetera, et cetera. But they're all like a little bit different. Like, I feel like an ideal Cali bag would be just like two putters of equal stability, two rocks of equal stability, and two T-birds of equal stability. And I'd throw so much better.
Right. Yeah. All my doubles are not the same disc.
Right. Exactly.
I have like a DX and a star T-bird. They're very different. Messed up the drives on one hole twice. And I was able to save par on a hole you really should birdie, but I was happy with it.
I did want to add one last thing about the antisocial league, is that there is only one player who has improved his or her handicap each week since the very beginning.
Ooh, can we guess?
Yeah, absolutely. Andrew, who do you think? Unless
did
he told
you, Pat?
Yes, it is actually. Yeah.
I had Pat in my head. I was thinking the same thing. I was like, I don't know too many Beacon
guys.
Go, man.
In the first round, I went in with an 8 handicap. I shot 3. This is up. These are all ups. I shot 3 and I knocked it down to 6. Then I shot a 3 again and I knocked it down to 5.3. And I'm on hole 20 at a 6. I just was lazy. I don't know why. And I had to throw one around the tree. It was only like 25 feet, but I had to go around one of those big pine trees.
Mm-hmm.
And it just dropped right in. Like a,
oh,
it was,
yes.
Wow.
That's
and it awesome. Got me to a 5 and with my 5.33.
Wow. Are you playing hole 20 with the hazard behind?
Yes.
Yes. I love that.
Yeah.
It's the only way to make that hole not a gimme.
Throwing drivers at it.
Yep.
Is 20 the old pool hole?
No. That's 18. 20 is the
one. I got to get down to Beacon. I haven't been down there in a few years.
Yeah.
Same. And you haven't experienced hole 20.
Or was it Pro Hyzer tag round, Andrew?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I still have your tag. I would love to give it back to you.
20 is like it looks like the most aceable hole. It's basically just so hole 2, if you play it as the par 4 where you've got to go through the woods on the left, you go off the tee.
Okay, so the last fairway. Time I was at Beacon, the pool hole was number 1.
Wow. Oh, okay. So hole 1 is the pool hole, hole 2 is that so hole 3
two
is the
was
one
like
with,
that little turnover
shot.
So, 3 was the flagpole hole.
Yep. Yep. Do you remember hole 4?
Yep. 4 now, four was the hyzer coming down the hill, right?
Yes. But you know how there's
the
trees
in the pine area.
Yes. Yeah, yes. Yeah. So in that pine area there, now there's a tee pad at the bottom where the road is and you're shooting up towards the entrance towards old hole 4's.
There's a
pad. Okay.
But yeah, if you go past the pin, if you go out of the pine area, it's a hazard. So like about 25 feet behind the hole, there's a hazard line. So you can, if you want to go for the ace, you run the risk of going out of bounds and having to putt.
Come back.
Yes. Yeah. And it's actually a tricky birdie even to get, because it's actually a pretty narrow fairway. So even if you're just trying to get there and lay up, it's like you can get there with a putter if you crush it. But like, and if you go mid, it's like you want to throw it nose up and let it settle down there. So it's pretty tricky. I feel like if that OB line wasn't there, the hazard line wasn't there, it'd be like too easy. So I think it's a pretty great hole the way it's designed.
Good use of the hazard. I like the hazard.
Yeah, for those that don't know, a hazard means you play it where it lies with a one-stroke penalty. The problem is because the basket, or I'm sorry, that OB line, like Ryan said, is only 25 feet back. So you take a meter off of that, and you're really, you got a 20-footer for par by just running it.
Right, which is not, you know, you need to be punished. You have to be punished by going for it. Yep, agreed.
And it also, we can feign a safety because people are
teeing off on hole 2. Yeah.
So if you're throwing hyzers out of the woods.
Yep. Exactly. Yeah, it's a great hole.
Calling the paparazzi.
I was listening to you guys all the way to Hollywood. I crack up laughing.
Oh, God. we've got Disc Capper of the Year.
Yeah, right. Klein. Shit.
My goodness. But gracing us with his presence.
Yeah, sorry I'd be a little late.
Oh, no, it's fine.
Some big names on this podcast. I feel like I'm watching Dancing with the Stars or something. You guys. How's your boogie?
Sorry, I'm getting
I can do the cha-cha slide. That's about it. They tell me what to do. Oh man.
All right, we ready?
Let's go. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's do it. Do it.